This is the Team Builders Podcast, building better teams.
Trust is key. And I think the thing is with trust, it's a two-way street. The more you trust someone, the more they trust you back. And then you can build a very strong relationship.
This is the Team Builders Podcast with Stephen Haseley, Jerry Crowley and Jonathan Haseley.
Folks, a very warm welcome to today's podcast with my two wonderful colleagues, Jerry and Stephen. Jerry, Stephen, how are we?
Yeah, great, Jonathan. I'm pumped for this. Looking forward to speaking to Dee.
Very much looking forward to speaking to Dee. I've been at his lovely estate and find a lot more about it and what the opportunities are there and what Dee thinks might be the opportunities in the future.
Wonderful. The perfect prologue from my two colleagues there as we introduce our guest for the day, Mr. Dee Ward. Dee, we're delighted to have you with us. Dee owns and runs Rottle Estate in the Angus Glens, and it is an accredited Wildlife Estates Scotland. The estate activities include sheep farming, holiday lets, grouse shooting, deer stalking, a hydroelectric scheme, and an event space, as well as lots of ongoing environmental projects, which we're obviously excited to talk to you about, Dee. And Dee is also the chairman of the Angus Glens Moorland Group. Dee, you sound like a busy man, so we thank you for taking the time out today. How are you, my friend?
Very well, and thank you for having me along today.
Wonderful. It's an absolute pleasure. Dee, why don't you kick us off and tell us a little bit about your wonderful part of the world there at Rottle Estate?
Rottle is about 8,000 acres. I've been living here for about 20 years. I came up from the south. I grew up in England, actually in the south of England, but came to Scotland a lot as a child, loved Scotland, sold a business in the south and moved to Scotland, wanting to buy a place like this, which I've, as I say, been doing for the last 20 years.
Fantastic, yeah. And what a place it is for those people that maybe haven't heard of it or haven't had the opportunity to visit yet. It really is a spectacular piece of land in a beautiful part of the country. And no doubt it was easy to be attracted there.
Very much so. I mean, it's funny, the Angus Glens aren't actually that well known outside Scotland.
Yeah.
Actually, even within Scotland, it's one of those places that when people come to, they go, oh, gosh, it's beautiful. I'm amazed I've never been here before. No, but it's a lovely part of the world.
Wonderful, wonderful. And we look forward to exploring some more of that with you over the next 20 minutes or so, Dee. In the meantime, if you don't mind, I'd like to take you back to maybe some first initial experiences. And you talked about your business that you sold in England. You obviously built up a really large business. How did you go about the kind of dynamic of building that team and, you know, scaling up before being able to progress on?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, after university, I set this up and it was a water cooler business, which is the office water coolers that
sure.
are now fairly commonplace. But at the time, they were just a new idea coming in from America. And there was obviously more drive for people to drink water and to have decent water. And at the time, the tap water in the south wasn't seen as that good. So we kind of hit a niche. And like with all businesses, you start up thinking you know what you're doing and realize very quickly you don't. And it took a while, with quite a lot of mistakes, to work out the right way of doing it. But eventually, I did build a good team around me. As I say, when you first start out, you're on a massive learning curve. And I found my management skills were probably not great. I had an idea of what management should be like. And as I've got older, I've probably become much more relaxed in how I treat people and how I work with people. And I realize that they often have the solutions and find better solutions than me. So the key is letting people do their job and not getting in their way. And I learned that that's quite an important one.
Love that. Yeah, for sure, Dee. And something that we chat a lot to some of our guests and, of course, our own clients and customers about, how we harness the power of the team around you as opposed to just hoping that you have all the answers. So that speaks a lot to us for sure. Listen, there's so many aspects that we'd love to cover of Rottle Estate in general. I know my two colleagues, Stephen and Jerry, have lots of great questions as well. So I'm going to fling it over to Jerry.
Dee, lovely to talk to you. And excited to hear about the environmental projects that I know you're involved with and your enthusiasm for those. But just to link the two together, I wondered, you know, what role has effective teamwork played in some of those successes like peatland and the river restorations and things?
That's a really good question, Jerry. I mean, so the first project we did was actually a really good example in teamwork. I was approached by the Esk Fisheries Board to re-meander the Rottle Burn. It was a very important area for wildlife and especially for salmon, and it had been straightened 200 years before. I had never dealt with a kind of an NGO before, particularly in the private sector. You don't tend to do that. But what they wanted to do and what I wanted to do was on the same page. So that was really good. And through that, we started working together with lots of other organizations like the South East Catchment Partnership and so on. And we kind of learned to trust each other. We built a really good team. And what happened, the Rottleburn Remeandering has been a real success and we've won a number of awards for it. But what that has done is built this team of private and NGO that work together. And we're now working on a number of other projects with the likes of the RSPB as well and the Cairngorm National Park and Nature Scott. And actually, I realized the power of aggregating all the different interests in a team that works together.
Do you think that the people in that unit and that team know their role, or do they play the role that's needed? That's sometimes a question that, you know, we get asked.
I think what's been really good is I think people all know their role. They all bring strengths to the team. And I'm particularly poor at admin and paperwork and filling out documents.
Yeah.
And
don't
obviously
say that.
When you're trying to apply for funding, you need lots of that. You need to have the right answers. A lot of the NGOs are fantastic at doing that because it's all they do all day long. So actually, we work very well together. I'm quite good at the big picture practical stuff outside, you know. So I think everyone was very good at knowing their strong point, and it worked very well as a team.
Yeah, because, you know, it's all relatable to sport, isn't it? You know, even in basic, like football, soccer, you've got the striker. He rarely goes back and defends, but when he's needed to, he will, or she will, but they hang out where they're needed. And actually, out of interest, I was lucky enough to fish the Esk, and I definitely saw salmon, Dee, so I can confirm that it's a good job well done there, for indeed.
Well, that's good. It's interesting because we had some very bad floods. We had Storm Babette, but we were badly affected here. And I was very worried about the river. And actually, it broke its banks and it threw out stone everywhere. And 2 days later, I went and looked in a sort of over a bridge down into the water. And there was 6 or 7 salmon just lying there. And I thought, well, how fantastic. They haven't been affected by all that flooding. They've survived, which has been really good.
Awesome.
And I think there's a lot more. We're slowly seeing more fish coming into the river for the work we've done up in the Rottleburn, which is great.
I think nature is always going to survive and always going to be able to take the opportunity to move forward. 8,000 acres, you are a busy man. So juggling activities, Dee, like farming, holiday lets, sustainable experiences, how do you balance between conservation and preservation? And is there ever a conflict within your team and their approach to developing the estate itself?
It's the constant battle we have, because in our hearts, what we want to do is conservation. We want to do the right thing for nature. But up till this point, there has been very little money in it, and we need money to pay the bills and to pay the staff. But that's changing. I mean, things like peatland restoration that we're doing and woodland creation are creating things like carbon units. They're looking at how you get paid for nature-based solutions like managing flooding or water quality and things like that. So that is changing, and it's a really challenging one. And that's why working as a team, as I said before, with NGOs has been quite helpful, because it's enabled us to get money in to fund things we couldn't afford ourselves. But it is a challenge. And at the end of the day, we do need to make money. And what I'm looking to do now, what I'm looking to encourage the government to do and organizations, is we need an income rather than help with capital. I mean, capital's great, capital cost items, but actually income is so important to pay staff and to keep the lights on and so on, and make sure that we can dedicate our time to looking after, you know, wildlife and biodiversity and things like that.
We've been working in the team building business for over 20 years now, Dee, and we've found inconsistent opportunities to develop incentive experiences. What opportunities do you think there may be in the future going forward to attract more people to Scotland and again have a sustainable activity, a sustainable event, and sustainable incentive tours and trips to the likes of Rottal Estate?
Well, I think there's a huge drive to outdoors, the benefits of nature, mental health, how that helps, how it helps, healthy food, locally produced food. So whether that's meat or vegetables or fish or whatever, game grown locally. And, you know, the Scottish government have got a really big push on the well-being economy.
Yep.
And that's it's not just money. It's obviously mental health, well-being, physical health, and all these different things. And I think that what a place like Rottal can offer is all those benefits, because people can come to something which is very remote, yet not a million miles from anywhere, and be really out in the wilderness and see, you know, beautiful scenery and really find themselves in a way, and maybe challenge themselves too. That's really how I see Ropple working with visitors. And I think Scotland generally has got that. I know your question was a wider one on Scotland, but I think Scotland has so many beautiful places, so much outdoors, so much wildlife. And I know that we're working to improve wildlife even more, but I do think that's beginning to happen. And I think that's a huge opportunity for Scotland.
And also, I think when some people talk about incentive, they perceive it as just being from abroad, from America, China, Norway, etc. But there's a wealth of opportunities from Northern Ireland, Wales, England, etc., that really appreciate the Scottish landscape and, as you said, the natural produce. And Scotland can produce salmon and farm beef and stuff like that as well, of course.
And Dee, you know, one thing that strikes me whenever we're talking about those, you know, ongoing projects and things, how do you find, or how do you think that you might manage the change towards a more commercial project for those staff that you have working on the estate? I imagine there's lots of people that, you know, really key focus is to care for the wildlife, care for their surrounding areas. Is there a concern or a challenge that you see that you might need to overcome with their mindset to drive towards some level of commerciality for your estate?
So we have elements of commercial. So the hydroelectric scheme, for example, generates quite a decent revenue for the estate. And without that, I think we would struggle. But I see it very much as probably my job to find ways to make nature pay. And whether that's through carbon, whether that's through nature-based solutions, whether that's through the new, for example, the new farm subsidy scheme, which is going to pay much more for nature-based outcomes and so on. I see that very much as my role, and let the team here do what they do best, which is managing the land and managing nature and so on.
Now, Dee, I've got an interesting question for you if you're ready for this one. We work a lot with teams around the world, really, and different cultures and different ages and all sorts. And I myself came to work in Scotland. I had to change a little bit of my leadership style just to fit in, although my mistake was it took me maybe 15 years to discover that. And I read somewhere that, you know, you may be a little half Norwegian, perhaps, or a little less, not sure of the exact breakdown, but you will have different cultural experiences. I wonder, how did that affect your leadership within your team, or did it?
I am. My mother is Norwegian. I'm half Norwegian. And yeah, I think that has, I mean, it's funny when you're growing up, you don't really realize what impact that has on you. But actually, I spent a lot of my childhood in the summer in Norway. It's a very egalitarian society, which I think is good. And I think that that probably gives me a much more open mind than had I been just from an English background or British background or whatever. And I think that culturally I'm much more open to differences. In my sort of link to Scotland, I sometimes wonder, at the age of 5 or 6, I always loved Scotland. As soon as I came here, I just felt at home in Scotland. And I don't know whether that's to do with the mountains and the fact that in my DNA there's that attachment to Norway and the mountains, but I definitely am attracted to Scotland. And it's, you know, not dissimilar in many ways to Norway. And that's probably where the link to Scotland came.
I mean, you can learn so much from the people around you and how they need to be managed than trying to instill your own way of doing it, if you like.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think it's really important to have an open mind in dealing with knotty problems, because actually, if you just look at it one way, you often can't solve a problem. So I try and step back and think, what other ways can I look at this problem? I'm quite good at that, actually. I'm quite good at turning problems on their head and say, well, let's look at it in reverse and see if we can get a better answer.
Dee, you've been involved with Ropple Estate for over 20 years now. Did you find in the early stages difficult to work with the team that was existing there to try and paint your own vision and your own future for the estate, of people who potentially thought, well, we've never had to do this before, or why are we doing this? Did you find that a challenge in the early days?
Yes, it was. When I got here, we've got a team of 8 now. When I got here, there was only one person here apart from me. So it was a much smaller operation. And that was all revolved around shooting. So as a gamekeeper and so on. And he had very traditional views of how an estate should run, which I didn't necessarily hold, but I kept an open mind. I think it's important to do that. But over the first few years, I learned the way I think it should be. And one of the things that we really tried to do is plant more trees. A lot of the estate is heather hill, which is lovely in its own way, but there's also huge scope for more trees lower down. And so we started putting a lot of hedges in and trees and riparian trees along the edge of rivers and so on. And that's made a huge amount of difference to the wildlife. Now, a lot of, as I took on people, I kind of was explaining my vision. And I think that helps, because as soon as you know your vision, other people either buy into it or don't. And if they don't buy into it, they don't want to come and work for you. But it has evolved, and it's taken me 20 years to get to where I am, and I'm evolving the whole time. So how I looked on the world 10 or 15 years ago is very different to how I look on the world now. And I suppose the climate crisis has really made me review everything we do critically and saying, is this delivering net biodiversity gain? Is this good for the planet? Is it good for Scotland? And I view everything through that prism now. And I think my enthusiasm infuses the team I have here as well.
And we have a lot of people and an ever increasing number of people listening into our podcast. So what advice would you give to emerging leaders on building their own teams, and not just that, but maintaining long-term success? What advice would you give to them, please, Dee?
Keep an open mind. Learn to trust people. I think it's very easy to, because someone doesn't do something the way you think they should do it, it's wrong. And actually, normally, if they're an intelligent person, they'll work out the best way to do it. So trust them to do it. And they normally will come up with an answer way better than one you could have thought of. So that's probably what I'll do. I think trust is key. And I think the thing is with trust, it's a two-way street. The more you trust someone, the more they trust you back. And then you can build a very strong relationship.
Sound advice.
Dee, I've got, you know, a slightly different direction I was going to go. You've obviously been enormously successful in all that you've done. And unless you're the only person that has never had a few failings on their way to success, I'm guessing there's been a few challenging times too. Is there any sort of time that sticks out to you where you know, coming up against something, some real difficulties, some real struggles, some real stress? And, you know, what did that feel like? And how did you lead through that? How did you, you know, progress on for yourself and then for your team?
I've definitely had a few of those. And actually running an upland estate, you have a lot of those, because you just think you're starting to win and then you get a storm or something and all your trees blow down. Or I had two years ago, in Storm Arwen got destroyed and I had to rebuild them. And you just think, you know, how am I going to pull myself out of it? But going back further in time, my biggest probably challenge I ever had was when I set up my water cooler business, and I was beginning to do quite well. And we had to do a total product recall because a batch of water didn't pass its sort of rigorous testing.
Yeah.
And because of the nature of water cooler, not only have you got to collect, because they're recyclable bottles, we refill these bottles, you had to collect the bottles, deliver new bottles, and clean the machine that the water was in. And literally, our business went from a good business to nothing overnight, because we couldn't sell any water until we'd cleaned each machine. So I got all the team together, and we probably had about 50 staff or something like that, 50 or 60 staff. And I said, look, we all have to just get in vehicles and go out. So rather than just the delivery guys do it, we all have to do it. And we had a small team manned the sort of customer services to deal with queries. And everyone else went out cleaning machines and replacing water. And it took us 2 months and we went through 8,000 water coolers.
Wow.
Turned them all around. And actually, funnily enough, people were really impressed that we did it. So they stuck with us. So it was quite a moving experience. You can tell by I'm slightly choked up talking about it now. But I looked like I was going to lose everything. And slowly, slowly, we built it back as a team. And everyone just did a fantastic job. And we did get some insurance payout at the end, which helped. And what I did was I said to staff, because they all worked so many hours, I said, I'll take the insurance money. And we divided it amongst everyone.
And
so
everyone
got a bit of a payout. And it wasn't massive, but they got a little bit of recompense for all the hard work they put in.
So that's amazing. And even, I guess, though, to have people, you know, buy into that approach won't have been easy. You know, you obviously had some strategies or motivational, you know, pull to pull that together. I guess that was challenging enough at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, really, it really was, because you, Ken, I was just honest. I said, look, this is a problem that we can solve, but it's all hands to the pump. It's a bit like having a ship that's thinking, you know, you just, everyone needs to do their bit and we'll get out of it. But if you don't, we won't. And to be fair to a person, everyone just stepped up to the plate, which was really, really good. So I was really impressed with everyone.
That's a similar tenacity that we have when Jonathan, Jerry and I go fishing, Dee. We're always in for the long haul.
Because we can't catch anything, usually.
But we like to watch this fish swim past.
Yeah, I was going to ask about morale, but I mean, after listening to that story, I think, you know, you've blew my question out of the water, Dee. But, you know, if it ever comes your way, I guess now, working with the team now, there'll be different morale issues and, you know, you've got the weather as well, which sometimes comes into play in our business too. Would you have any, you know, one or two strategies to keep them on course?
There are days when you think you're in the best job in the world, and there are days when everything that you've tried to do goes wrong. Yeah. Normally natural events like, you know, a storm or whatever, or something goes wrong, and it's, you just struggle to pick yourself back up. But what I know is that I just have to digest the problem for a day, and I feel really down, I suppose, for a day. And then I come out and I think, you know what, I can solve this. And then I find a solution and I keep going. And I think a lot of life is like whatever you do, you just have to keep going. If you're running a marathon, you get to a bit and you're just exhausted, but you just think, I've got to keep going. And then you get a second wind and away you go again. And I think business is like that. People think it's a linear thing and it just gets better and better. It's a lot of hiccups on the way. And sometimes when you're in the bottom of the hiccup, you wonder if you're going the right direction. And then you come back out and you think, oh, I'm pleased I persevered.
Yeah. And you have said a few times today, you know, great question. That was a great answer. I can really relate to that too myself, having been a little bit of sport as well.
Dee, listen, we're getting towards the end of our time and our conversation today, which we've really enjoyed. Stephen, I know you've got one more big launching question for Dee to take us home.
20 years of success, Dee. What's next for Rottal Estate? Can you share any of your vision for the future at the estate?
So we're very much focused on climate change, climate resilience, wildlife and biodiversity. So really a lot of our focus going forward is how we do that. And we've got some projects in the pipeline. In terms of numbers, we've got 200 hectares of peatland we're looking to restore over the next 3 or 4 years, 500 hectares of native woodland or natural regeneration we want to create. We've got 50 hectares of wetland restoration we want to do. So those are the sorts of things we're looking at from an environmental point of view. We're looking at working with people at Angus Council to see if we can prevent flooding further down the river. So you saw all the bad flooding in Brechin. I'm looking at working with organizations like that. How can we work together in the uplands and solve these problems for people further down? Because climate change and climate adaptation is going to become more and more important. And if we don't deal with it up here, people in Brechin and so on in the towns below will get flooded. So I think it's really important we all take that responsibility seriously. And I hope that people will start paying for those ecosystem services that we'll offer. And I think that's important. But on the other side of things, obviously, we're keen on our event side. And I think that, you know, we obviously do weddings and other events. I like the idea of locally produced stuff. I like the idea of local markets. I like the idea of events, of sort of, you know, team challenge and so on, these sort of events happening at Rottal. Because I think we can offer a real great well-being experience for people. And that's something I'm really going to look at and see, because I think that all ties in together. Nature, biodiversity, climate and people's well-being, all it's reconnecting people with nature. So that's a kind of overview of direction of travel, if that helps.
Yeah, that's a great direction, Dee. And, you know, we're very excited to be, you know, a small part of that journey and our ongoing partnership with, you know, working towards some fantastic sustainable events at Rottal Estate, which we're, you know, really enthused and engaged by. And we look forward to our continued work together. So listen, Dee, thank you so much for being so generous with your time today. We've really enjoyed the conversation. I know we've got a lot out of it. And yeah, inspiring man for sure to lead the way at Rottal Estate. Thank you so much from my colleagues, Jerry and Stephen as well. Good to have you here, gents.
Yeah, thanks very much, Dee. Wonderful to chat.
Thank you.
Dee, you're a man with a plan. Look forward to working with you.
Absolutely. Dee, thank you so much, Mr. Dee Ward, folks. From us at the Team Builders Podcast, that wraps it for today. We'll look forward to catching you all next time. Thank you.